Broadcasting around the world on International Shortwave and on the Radio Disclosure Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Aaron. I bid you good evening, good morning, wherever you may be in our universe. Tonight's guest, Stan Gordon. He's in Pennsylvania. It was a suggestion from one of the listeners out there to talk to Stan and get his information on out there. And briefly talking with him, he's been doing this a long time. Welcome to the show, Stan. I am greatly honored to have you with us tonight. For the audience, very briefly, tell us about yourself. How long have you been doing this?
Well, believe it or not, right now we're going on 63 years of research. I started this when I was 10 years old as a curious kid, interested in science. I heard a radio show back in those days talking about unusual happenings. I began to go to the library and read all the books they had on these subjects, such as flying saucers and haunted houses and odd things. And I was 16 years old when the incident happened near Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, began documenting that case as it broke on the news that day. So I've been out in the field since 1965, investigating UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids, and all kind of phenomena. In 1969, I set up a hotline for the public to report UFO sightings. That hotline has been active ever since. It never stops ringing right through the last couple of days. Reports come in from, I deal mainly in PA, but I get calls from all over the country. And in 1970, I founded the first of three volunteer research groups that for many years would investigate UFO sightings and Bigfoot and other phenomena across the state of Pennsylvania. The groups were kind of unique in that most people involved were specialists. We had scientists, engineers, technicians, police officers, former military people. We all volunteered to do this around our full-time jobs. And I had a setup that we could respond to cases 24 hours a day. And by 1973, again, we were very active across the state, and we were actually beginning to receive referrals from the news media, law enforcement, and we were extremely busy for years and years. And so I continue to do this, and surprisingly, in all the years I've been involved, I've never seen a UFO or a Bigfoot. I've seen a lot of evidence. I've interviewed thousands of UFO witnesses and hundreds of Bigfoot witnesses, and it's a lot stranger phenomena. The more I know about it, the many people understand.
So, you've been doing this for 63 years.
Going on 63.
That's a lot of time. So, you know, this is no longer a hobby for you. This has become a life and a lifestyle. And I take it you have a full-time job as well.
Well, I had a full-time job. I'm retired. I worked in electronics my entire life. But while I was doing that and had a family, I was also running more than one research group at times with hundreds of people and very involved in investigations, and I continued to do that, and it never ends. Almost every day I'm dealing with past or recent cases with calls coming in or email reports, and sightings go on here in Pennsylvania all the time right through the last week.
Okay, so this story that you were talking about, the UFO crash in Pennsylvania. You said it's one of the most documented cases / famous cases. Where did that happen, and how did you find out about it, and what's the story?
Well, this is the case that happened here in Westmoreland County near the little village of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. I was 16 years old when it was breaking on the news December 9th of 1965. Again, we could talk for days about this case. There's so much involved in it. And just to make the story very short, and there's a huge amount of information all over the internet you can find about it. Some of the reports are a little more efficient than others. You can find the information also on my website as well. But it was breaking on the news around Pittsburgh. I was tuned in to listen to a radio show that night because they had a special guest on the large radio show in Pittsburgh on KDK Radio, and they were going to have on Frank Edwards, his name you might recognize, who was a journalist who had written some books on unusual occurrences. I was tuned in to listen to him. Most surprisingly, almost the entire radio show was focusing on breaking news that this brilliant fiery object that was seen from Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania earlier that afternoon. and they were interviewing witnesses and reading the newswire stories that were breaking on the case. And I began writing everything down, documenting as it's breaking on the news all evening. And I began to try to follow up within the days after it happened. There was news articles in the papers, but there wasn't that many names. And I tried to follow up best I could. But over a period of weeks and months and years, I tracked down hundreds of people who were involved in the incident. And there was so much we didn't know at the time. And just a brief summary of what we found out is that this object came in over the greater Pittsburgh area about 4:47 p.m. that day, just getting dark. Multiple witnesses were calling police departments, radio, newspapers, reporting this object over the greater Pittsburgh area. Whatever the object was, it fell into a wooded ravine close to 40 miles outside of Pittsburgh. And what was most interesting was the fact that within a relatively short time, the military was showing up in the Kecksburg area. And that made local and national news. And you had hundreds of people from around that part of western Pennsylvania, including reporters from all the major news networks in around Pittsburgh, the radio, TV, and newspapers, who went out to that area to investigate the report. And so they were part of the story. I interviewed many of the reporters who were there that night, who saw military personnel, military equipment. Some interacted with them. And it's an amazing story. But here's what I found out after over the years from multitudes of people, most who never went public for various reasons, was the fact that this object, whatever it was, as it came in from the greater Pittsburgh area and moved over into Westmoreland County, this object moved out Route 30 east, made a turn to the south, continued out to the mountains near Laurelville. According to witnesses who are all along this path, the thing kind of hesitated, turned back, and began to track back towards the Kecksburg area, made another turn, then dropped down into the wooded ravine. The witnesses said this thing was moving quite slowly, like a small aircraft on approach to an airport. When it fell, it was almost like, again, like a controlled landing. There were no parachutes seen at the site. So what I found out over the years was some of the local people who saw the object going down the woods, they went down in the woods and came across this large, semi-buried, acorn-shaped object, kind of an off-gold bronze color, about 10 to 12 feet in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. It had no weld marks, no seams, no fuselage. It was like one solid piece of metal. And on the raised-up back of the object, there were these unusual markings, more like symbols. And one witness who was only a few feet away from it, a volunteer fireman who was later involved in the search for what they thought was a downed aircraft, they didn't know what they were looking for, he said over the years from his memory and looking up ancient writings in different libraries, it looked somewhat similar to ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. Oh, well, the short part of the story is the military began to come in very quickly. The area was cordoned off. That night, numerous people around the area saw a large military flatbed tractor trailer carrying a large tarped object out of the area by 1 o'clock in the morning. I later, over the years, found out from independent sources, including military sources, the object was taken initially to Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio, under very heavy security. It stayed there a short time, then continued on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And later, I was told exactly what building they took it to at Wright-Patterson. It was not Hangar 18 that many people have talked about. Where its object is today, we do not know. And for years and years, you know, there's been a lot of controversy and interest in the case. There have been many, many theories proposed of whatever this thing may have been. And so regardless of what this thing was, and we may never know the truth, it's a very fascinating story. There's a lot of really detailed accounts from so many witnesses who were at the scene that night, who I interviewed, some who reacted with the military, a lot of interesting stories. It's a really interesting case, regardless of what the object might have been.
Stan, when we come back from the break, I want to ask more questions about what you know about the military's involvement in this. Investigating this since he was 16 years old, been doing this for 63 years, UFOs, Bigfoot, strange anomalies. Steve Gordon's our guest. He has a website, Steve Gordon Info. SteveGordon.info if you're wanting to get in contact with him. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. Stan just told us the story of this alien craft that landed in Pennsylvania, and the U.S. military took it on a flatbed semi-tractor trailer, is I believe what he said. And you said you've talked to people about this activity. And again, folks, his website is stangordon.info. That's stangordon.info. And Stan, what kind of information, public, non-public, officers you've talked to or private citizens that you talked to, what did they tell you about the craft? Any additional information?
Well, again, I've interviewed hundreds of people, and there were all different age groups out there that evening and who were involved. And over the years, again, some of the people I interviewed were people that were local. Some were people came into the area, and some of these people were people who were outside the area but had some information or had some type of connection with the case. And they're all kind of backgrounds. I mean, some of the people I interviewed at the time were law enforcement people, first responders, a lot of volunteer firemen. There were military veterans who were witnesses. One of them was, his name was Bill Bully Bush. Bill was a resident living in a small community very close to Kecksburg. And he was one of many witnesses that Bill may well have been one of the first, or maybe the first witness to actually see the object on the ground. And once again, as I mentioned initially, we still don't know for sure what this object was. And, you know, could it have been something extraterrestrial? Well, I think I've said for years that's one possibility. I said years and years ago, even though there's been a lot more data that showed up over the years that we've learned a lot more about and excluded a lot of different theories, that maybe this is some type of very secretive, very advanced man-made space probe that has some type of reentry capability. But there's been more and more data showing up over the years that we still haven't seen that turn up, even though so many Soviet and U.S. projects have been declassified that were secretive back in those days. But you got to remember, whatever this object was, it was moving relatively slowly. It made a change in direction along its course. It made a slow descent. There were no parachutes involved, and the thing was pretty much completely intact on the ground. Did not make a big trench, did not make a big hole in the ground. It came up quite slowly, but years later, we found what appeared to be a series of trajectory into that wooded area, knocked down, the trees were broken off, and witnesses who were down there the next day, some young kids, for example, John Hayes and his family who lived nearby, the woods were the kids' playground. They were down there every day in the woods. They were down there the day before, and everything was normal. The next morning, after the military was there and they saw all the activity, they went down the woods and noticed that the trees were all knocked down. But going back to Bill Bully Bush, Bill was under the dash of his car tuning up a CB radio that day when he happened to look up and see this fiery object moving from Norvelt out towards the mountain of Louisville. See, he ran out onto the road, and he sees this object, and he said it looked like it kind of hesitated over the mountain, then turned and began to come back towards the Kecksburg area, and it looks like it's coming down. So he jumps into his vehicle and goes to the highest point that overlooks that large area, that farmland, and this large wooded area that he would hunt in, so he knew the area well. And it's getting dark, and he sees like this blue arcing lights down in the woods. He said it was like kids playing with sparklers. Huh. So he grabs his flashlight and starts walking down from one side the whole way down through the woods down into that area. And anyhow, when he took me to that area, not knowing about the fact that we had found another witness the year before, and I told him nothing about it, where we were, what we found, he took me to a particular tree and said, I stood right here, and the object was right over there, and described seeing this large acorn-shaped object with like a blue arcing coming off of it. And that was the exact location that Jim Romanski, who was a volunteer fireman, who we happened to luckily, just by sheer luck, came across when we were holding up a large display at the local mall in UFOs the year before. And he took us down the year before from a completely different vantage point into those woods, because he was not from Kecksburg. He was with another volunteer fire department who was called out to assist in the Kecksburg area to search for a downed aircraft. And another team was on the radio who was searching and said they came across this object. So Jim and his team go over to that location, and they're standing on like a little embankment a few feet away from this thing. It's semi-buried in the ground, so they're all standing a few feet away from this thing. And interestingly, Jim, who most of his life was a machinist who worked with metals, he said he had never seen anything like this before, but this was so important. He said it looked like somebody took liquid metal and put it into an acorn-shaped mold. It was one seamless object. And that's what is so interesting from the report that we got from him and other people.
So it sounds like nobody saw any little green men in this experience, but definitely this was not a weather balloon. This was not a man-made object at this point. It sounds like this device was made of something very strong, very, you know, weather balloon's not going to take out trees. You know, you're not going to bend trees with a weather balloon. It's weather balloon's going to get stuck in a tree. And again, what year was this?
It was 1965.
So in 1965, this is definitely not man-made technology. This is, I mean, this sounds like, I mean, we're still, even today, flying aluminum aircraft. Stan.
Yes, sir.
So you do the greater Pennsylvania of all kinds of different investigations. This investigation, do you have any books, do you have any documentation that people can get on this particular case?
Yeah, actually, years ago, I produced a documentary, which is still available on DVD out there. It's on, you can go to Google, Amazon. It's called Kecksburg, The Untold Story. And it's a very detailed account where some of the key witnesses, and unfortunately, many of them have now passed away. The reason I did that was because over the years, some of the different TV shows that a few of the witnesses appeared on, they only got seconds to tell their story. I wanted to give these people a chance and to document it for history and let these people tell in detail what they experienced or what they saw. So this is what this is. And it's still available out there through Amazon.com.
Very good. We'll try to find a link to that and put that on the website. We're going to put your books that you have currently on the website on a link, so that way people can grab those at any time and go up there and grab them. We'll also put your website up there as well for them.
So we appreciate that. And I've been doing a lot of research for many, many years. The Kecksburg case is most interesting because regardless of what the object was, it's well documented the military was there, and for them to respond as quickly as they did with the personnel and equipment, it was something of great importance. And after so many years, the public still has no idea what this thing was that the government recovered. And so it's a very interesting case. But I can tell you, in the many years since then, I've investigated multitudes of very close-range, low-level UFO sightings, including some that have just occurred in recent weeks, some interesting cases, that are not cases you can easily explain away. And but also, 1973 is when some very interesting things came to my attention and my group's attention. In 1973, Pennsylvania experienced the largest UFO outbreak ever documented. It started January 1st and continued to the last day of the year. There were hundreds and hundreds of UFO sightings being reported across the state. And many of these, again, were not lights in the sky. Many of these were large structured objects seen close to the ground. So we had many cases of things hovering over highways, pacing vehicles, or landing reports. It was an amazing time. And back then, you know, we had many local papers, statewide papers, and of course national papers, and many of those newspapers were picking up these stories. And many of them were covering some of the investigations we were doing. So it was covered quite well. And so we had all these UFO reports going all year round, which was just keeping us extremely busy. But then it got much more interesting and unusual. In the summer of 1973, we had the biggest outbreak of Bigfoot sightings recorded. We went for months and months in the early 1974. And that was amazing in itself. because so many of these Bigfoot accounts, these weren't like something you see on some of the TV shows that you see a shadow in the dark a half a mile away. Many of these sightings were in daylight. Many of them were extremely close range. In some cases, there was more than one creature seen together. In a lot of the cases, there was physical evidence, many in the ways of footprints, which we made many casts of the footprints. And my teams were out there day and night responding to these cases, and so were the police in some cases. And it was just amazing things. So when I got involved investigating all these Bigfoot reports, you know, I was aware of the history of Bigfoot sightings around the country and in Pennsylvania going back for years. And at that point, I was pretty much convinced that the legitimate reports may well be some type of unknown animal, some type of unknown primate. But as these cases were unfolding, some very strange things began to come to our attention. A few of the things were, one, we'd get some of the teams, including myself, we'd get out to some of these locations. There'd be a series of very large footprints with very big strides between them under different type of ground conditions. And in the wintertime, including in the winter, so in the snow. But what was so unusual is, in some cases, these large tracks would suddenly abruptly just stop and end when there should have been more tracks. It made absolutely no sense. And that was odd. And then stranger reports began to come in from widespread areas from different people. And a lot of these calls initially came in the police department right at that time. And we began to see a pattern. We have a UFO sighting in a particular area. Within minutes to hours or days later, we have a Bigfoot sighting or vice versa.
Oh my gosh. Stan? We come back from the break. I want to talk more about this correlation of UFOs and Bigfoot. It's not the first time I've heard this. 1-833-880-9899 is our number if you want to join us. 1-833-880-9899. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure, 1-833-880-9899. That's 1-833-880-9899. Stan Gordon's our guest. 1973, starting in January, large amounts of UFOs over all of Pennsylvania. Then in the summer of 1973... it's almost, as he put it, a silent invasion of Bigfoots. And you said that there was a book out on that, and I didn't capture the name of it when you said it, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I wrote the book, well, years and years later after I started writing about and documenting these things. I started writing about the incidents and what I was finding in the early 1970s. So the book is out in more recent years. It's called Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. So it goes into great detail about a few of the things we'll probably talk about tonight.
So, okay, these Bigfoot sightings. You say it's not your typical Bigfoot sighting where you got the big guy out in the field and it looks like, you know, yeah. You're saying these were much worse. Now, we did an interview with Dr. Melba Ketchum, and she's the one who had the Bigfoot DNA. And as she put it, it ruined her career. And at first she thought the Bigfoot stuff was just crazy, blah, blah, blah. But she sent this stuff off to like 13 different labs, and the science behind her DNA is as solid as I could ever get to. You know, it amazes me. I guess I have to ask the question, how many of these has your team researched? And in addition to researching these sightings, how many of these sightings do you find that are credible?
Are we talking just in general Bigfoot encounters?
Sure.
I deal with these cases every year. Like I said, my hotline's been open since 1969. I get calls about everything. Listen, I get calls from people from all kinds of backgrounds, and 99.9 of these people do not want any publicity. Many of them are, I get calls from hunters, you know, outdoorsmen, engineers, school teachers, police officers who have seen these things, just like with UFO observers. Most of them want no publicity whatsoever. Most of them never believe that these cases or incidents whatever occurred, because they thought they were all stories and hoaxes, so they had their own encounters. And let me tell you, some of these people from 20, 30 years ago, I'm still in touch with at times, their lives have been dramatically changed since that day, because some of them still can't deal with what they saw. And there's no doubt something's going on out there. The question is, what are we dealing with? And, you know, as we get into a couple of these cases I'll tell you about, well, I think you're going to find that the whole phenomena is much stranger than any of us ever imagined. Because, again, when I got involved in the Bigfoot phenomena, I thought we were dealing with an unknown animal. And as we talk more about these cases, and I'll give you some examples, I am, again, not suggesting that Bigfoot, for example, is a passenger or a pilot of a spacecraft from another planet, because we don't know for sure what the UFOs are. You know, I said years ago, the data I was seeing indicates the possibility that we're dealing with more than one origin to the unknown category. So could some of these be maybe extraterrestrial? But more and more information and more cases I've been involved with, and again, it's not just on what I've dealt with. I've been in touch with many witnesses and many investigators and researchers around the country and out of the country who are now finding and investigating, even in recent years, more and more the same kind of case I've been investigating since the 70s, and they're finding the same thing that I am. And the more data that I'm seeing in suggests we're dealing with a phenomena that has both a physical and a non-physical component to it. And for a lack of a better term, some of what we might be dealing with might be interdimensional.
Oh, my. I've heard other people talk about the interdimensional capabilities of these entities. And I talked to one guy in private. He was a hunter, and he shot one. And he said that it disappeared, it came back, and that was pretty much it. I mean, there were you couldn't touch these things. They were almost untouchable. I've also talked to some other researchers that are out. Of course, you know, we're in the hills of Tennessee here, and we see all kinds of crazy. But in the hills of Tennessee, on the east side, up on the Smoky Mountains, and the park up there, the federal park, I've heard stories that there's actually a group of military people that go and hunt the bad Bigfoots. Have you heard anything about that?
I've heard a lot of stories, and I can tell you this. 1973, when all this was going on in Pennsylvania, there was also a number of Bigfoot areas around the country where Bigfoot sightings were going on, a lot of UFO sightings in across the country in the fall of 73, when the country was experiencing a large wave of UFO sightings, but in PA was all year round. However, in Tennessee, and again, a lot of people don't even know about this, I'm going from memory from many, many years ago, but there was a very similar, more isolated outbreak similar to Pennsylvania going on in, I believe it was called Giles County, Tennessee. And there was a local newsman down there, I believe he was a newspaper man, who wrote a private, small publication going into great detail about all the strange phenomena that was going on in that part of Tennessee, very much like what was going on here in Pennsylvania. So that's something you may want to take a look at and into.
So I'm looking up right now to see where Giles County, Tennessee is.
I believe it's G-I-L-E-S, if my memory's right.
Yep, I'm looking at it right now. So Giles County, we're less than about 40 minutes away from Giles County. I know exactly where that's at. It's down close to the Huntsville and Tennessee and Alabama border. There's a lot of activity in that area, up towards Knoxville, up by the Pigeon Forge area and all that. I've heard of all the activity up there. But anyways, the biggest thing that sticks out for you as far as Bigfoot in the stories and all that, what is the biggest story for you or case that you have investigated?
Okay, well, there are many, but there are two cases that really stand out from that time period. And these cases are significant enough that they changed probably my life and what I was investigating, and many of the team members I had, who were some were very skeptical scientific people. But let me tell you the first story. This happened October 25th, 1973. So we just recently had, I believe, the 48th anniversary of this case. There were many UFO reports going on in Pennsylvania. My hotline was very busy during that 24-hour period of October 25th. At 10:30 that night, I get a call from a state trooper from the Uniontown Barracks in Fayette County, PA, which is a continuous hotbed for years and years for UFOs and Bigfoot, especially along the Chestnut Ridge. But the trooper called me and said he just came back from investigating this incident. He believed there was something still up in this farm, and he wanted to know if I could get one of my teams up there as soon as possible, which we did. It was late at night, but we got some of our team members together. We got our radiation gear and our other equipment, our radio equipment, everything together. Early morning hours, we found our way up to Fayette County. The basic of the story was around 9 o'clock that night, you had about 15 people in that rural area that observed this very large barn-sized red sphere about 100 feet off the ground, hovering and beginning to slowly move downward. And I always focus the story on the farmer's son who was coming out to visit his father. And he's riding down the farm lane, and he sees these people standing outside, and he sees this large object in the sky that looks like it's moving downward. So he goes to a little better location, a higher location, get a better look, and it looks like this big thing is going to land on the pasture of his dad's farm. So there were two young neighbor boys, and he decides they're going to go up to the farm pasture and see what this thing is. Before they go up there, they stop over his dad's farm. He grabs a 30-06 and a handful of ammunition. And he didn't realize till later, in that handful of ammunition, he had two tracer bullets. So the guys out there at hunt know you just get that luminous trail when you fire those tracer bullets. Anyhow, as they're riding down the farm road, the dogs around the area are just howling like crazy, barking like crazy. They hear this high-pitched whining noise and these loud baby crying sounds. And as they get closer and closer to the area of the pasture, the sounds are getting louder. Put their headlights on, they angle their truck so they can see their path going up the hill, and it looks like something's draining the power from the headlights that they had never noticed that before. They finally get on top of the hill to the pasture, and they're standing there, and they're looking across the field, and about 250 feet away, they're amazed at what they're seeing, because here's this large object now on the ground or right above it. But now it's not a complete sphere, it's like a half a sphere. It's a dome-shaped object that's making that high-pitched whining noise, and it's illuminating the whole area.
Oh, my.
So while they're standing there watching this thing, their attention is drawn to a barbed wire fence about 75 feet away. Along that barbed wire fence, you've got these two tall, hair-covered creatures slowly walking one behind the other in their direction. The one in front's about 8 feet tall. The one behind is about 7 feet tall. They come with long, dark, matted hair. They're walking upright. They're bipedal. The arms are so long, they're hanging down almost to the ground. They have no neck. They have luminous green glowing eyes, and they're making that whining, crying baby sound. And one of the young boys, upon seeing that, runs out of the field. The older fellow, they shoot him. He takes his first shot. First shot's with that tracer. You've got that luminous trail. He fires that second tracer, and when he does, the largest of the two creatures makes that loud crying whining noise, reaches out with one of its hands as though to grab at the tracer, and at that exact time it does that, that large glowing object vanishes and disappears. It doesn't take off. It disappears and it's gone. So most of the luminosity is gone. The sound stops. The creatures turn around, start walking back along the fence line. The fellow starts loads his weapon with live ammo, is firing at them with live ammo. He's been hunting for years. He's sure he hit them with no effect on him. He always told me, he said he'll never forget how that largest creature with his glowing green eyes kept staring at him as he's firing live ammo into his 30-06 with no effect on it whatsoever. So the two guys, they run back to their truck. They go to the farmhouse. They take the family to a neighbor, and they call the state police. And I'm giving you the short part of the story. When the troop arrived 45 minutes later, they go up in the troop car to look for evidence. The state trooper told me the area where the object was on the ground was self-luminescent and glowing.
Oh, my.
About 100 feet or more in diameter. He said if he had a newspaper, he was sure he could read a newspaper from the glow coming off the object. They both later on went back to the barracks. I was told both the trooper and the witness were taken to two separate rooms, separately interviewed, and then they called me to send up my team. And that's the short part of the story. I don't even have time to get into what happened during the night. But I wrote the whole thing up in my Silent Invasion book. It's probably one of the strangest cases ever documented. So that was the case that convinced my team and I that the Bigfoot phenomena and even the UFO phenomena is much more complex and much stranger than any of us had ever imagined. But then there was another case that occurred several months later.
Hold on. Hold on, Stan. Hold on. When we come back from the break, we're going to continue this next case he's talking about. And then I have one question for you as well. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. Stan Gordon is our guest. His information's on our website at radiodisclosure.com. Stan, before I ask you the question about this case that obviously is extremely creepy, multiple gunshots, object disappears, state trooper, you guys and your team are back up there, just the whole bit. So you, from what I remember you saying earlier, is you have radiation teams and or radiation detection equipment at that site. Were you able to detect any strange radiation or anything along those lines afterwards?
No, we were there within hours after it happened, and of course we checked the radiation level. Everything was normal background radiation, so it was nothing unusual. And the glow, by the time we got there, the glow was gone, but the farm animals still would not go into that area.
I guess if I were a farm animal and I just saw that go down, I wouldn't want to be around there either. So, okay. Real quick, before you tell your next story, you've got three books that are out. They're on Amazon. We're going to put that on the website. What are the name of the books and what are they about?
Okay, well, the book that would cover what we're discussing now in much greater detail and a lot of strange things, including the mystery men and showed up and a lot of things going on, is called Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. My first book is called Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, which goes into very detailed cases where people were physically very close to low-level UFOs or Bigfoot or other strange creatures or cryptids. So that's very interesting. And then the last book I did is called Astonishing Encounters, Pennsylvania's Unknown Creatures. And that, again, gets into a lot of very strange Bigfoot cryptid UFO cases. And, again, if all goes well next month or so, my fourth book will probably be out, which is going to have some very, very strange cases of more recent years.
Well, when your book comes back out, you need to hit us back up and we'll talk about your new book and all the stuff in it. So the second case, I guess you were bringing up another case and you wanted to discuss that.
Well, this was the case, among others, but the case that really convinced me and some of the fellows in my group, again, that we're dealing with something that's not just an unknown animal. We're dealing with something that has other than just flesh and blood capabilities. We're dealing with something that's much stranger. And this occurred back in February 6, 1974, up near Ohio Pile, way up in the mountains, an area that has a long history of all kind of cryptid and Bigfoot and UFO encounters, even in recent years. And what happened was, what I learned, I couldn't get up to the scene till early the next morning. And the reason was, back at that time, and some of your listeners in the country here will remember, there was a big national trucker strike. There was gas rationing, so a lot of gas was not available in my area at that time. There was some violence on the highways across the country here in Pennsylvania, so the National Guard was patrolling with the state police. So with this incident, you had some members of both units that responded to this case. So what happened was, that evening, deep in the mountains, this woman lived there for years in a little cabin home. Was sitting there watching TV. It was a normal night when she heard this little commotion on her front porch. She had some empty pop cans there, and someone was knocking the pop cans around. Well, her first thought was that a couple weeks before, she had a pack of wild dogs came through, and she thought, I bet the dogs are back. She thought, you know, I'll just grab my shotgun, and I'll shoot over their head, and I'll scare those dogs away. So she goes over, and she grabs her 16-gauge double-barrel shotgun, loads one chamber, walks over to the front door, opens the front door, turns on the switch to turn on the porch light, and as soon as she steps out, there's no dogs, but about 7 feet, by about 6 feet or so in front of her, here's this at least 7 foot tall, hair-covered Bigfoot that raises its arm straight up over its head as soon as she turns the light on. And how does she respond? She fires right into it with her shotgun.
Oh, she said
there's this bright burst of light like a flash on a camera, and the creature physically vanishes and disappears right in front of her. And interesting, and that's not the whole story, but anyhow, what's so interesting was, as many times I interviewed her, she never called it a Bigfoot. She said, it looked like a great big hairy ape is what she said to me. So anyhow, as soon as she fires that gun, that shot, her in-laws lived 100 feet away. They heard the shot, and they called her on the phone and asked her, what are you shooting at? She tried to tell them. Well, her son-in-law grabs the sidearm, starts walking down that dark road, and as he got closer, he said he was surrounded by four or five hairy people with eyes like coals of fire.
Oh, my.
Started shooting at them randomly, runs into the cabin. A short time later, they see this large, luminous object hovering over the woods at the same time. That's when they called the state police for help. And I talked to the primary investigator, and he said, by the time they all got up into the mountains and found their place, whatever there was gone. But he said, something very strange happened there. And he said, that was based on the animal reactions, which, as I told you earlier, I've never seen a Bigfoot. I think I was close to one or more than one case. But I've seen the animal reactions, and that's what he based his on, the animal reactions. They had a number of different animals up there, but they had several very large, vicious dogs. When they got there, silence, no barking, nothing. The dogs would not respond. And I remember the one trooper told me there was one of the big dogs, I think it was an Eskimo Spitz, was in a cage, and he opened the cage up, and the dog wouldn't even move. And the other animals were all reacting very strange as well. The next morning when I got there early, all the dogs were barking again as normal. But that was the case, among others that were similar, that convinced me that we're dealing with something that's much more unusual, and again, for lack of a better term, could be interdimensional.
Some people have said, and I don't know if you've ran across this with the Bigfoots, that they're very spiritual in nature. I don't know if you heard anything like that.
I've heard a lot from around the country. Can you give me more detail what exactly you mean by that?
I've actually had some people tell me that they're part of the Anunnaki, which was listed in the Bible, and they have a deal with God, and they can't supposedly reveal themselves to humans, and if they do, they have a punishment because of it. I've heard all kinds of interesting theories on that. I don't know. Spirituality, I guess, with the Bigfoot is a very interesting twist in that. I don't know. I've figured out ask.
And again, there's so many different theories, and I have found a large amount of data about Bigfoot and how strange it is that many, many people just don't know about. And we talked about the disappearing footprints, the tracks that just suddenly vanish and disappear abruptly. I should explain it a little easier that way. But there's a lot of things that go on. And something else, among others, that stands out. Since the 1960s, I've been investigating what I call mini UFO sightings. And these are quite interesting because in more recent years, you're hearing more and more about this, including from many people in the Bigfoot field around the country. And I started again writing about this back in the 70s. And these objects are really interesting because they're not high in the sky. They're low to the ground. They come very close to human witnesses. In some cases, they paced vehicles. I've had them enter people's homes and cars through open windows and glided around and floated around and went back out through the window or went right through the walls. The smallest of these things are about an inch or two in diameter. They're like huge overgrown fireflies. More commonly, The little larger spheres are about 1 to 2 feet in diameter, but some have been larger. That's pretty common. Some are solid metallic looking. In other cases, they're brilliant balls of light of different colors. They're again, very bright. They come very close to people. We've had instances, even this year like this. We've had them in daylight. But more and more reports over the years in areas where we have a history of Bigfoot sightings, that Bigfoot researchers and other people in the woods reporting these small spheres of light or other unusual light phenomena low in the trees, low to the ground, sometimes approaching close to some of these researchers or witnesses, then taking off and moving away from them. So that's something that's very interesting, and that's another anomaly that's been showing up more and more.
So it sounds like to me that Pennsylvania has a lot of activity. Would you say in the United States that Pennsylvania has more activity, or is it about the same?
Okay, well, once again, the incident I'm just talking about is not only in Pennsylvania. It's being reported all over the country and out of the country as well. And, you know, years and years ago when I started writing about these various phenomena that I was finding in the 70s, and I was in contact with many of the well-known names in the Bigfoot field in the country and out of the country, well, I found out a lot of these people were aware of similar cases to what I was investigating, but they told me they didn't want to write about it. They were reluctant to because they were afraid of being laughed at by their fellow researchers. My opinion was that this is what I was finding. This is the information I was documenting. I don't have the answers to what's going on, but I wanted to get it out there to share with other people, hopefully to encourage other people to report it. And now, after so many years, especially in the last few years, now other researchers, there have been several other books are written now, and they're coming out with the same thing I found years ago. We're all confirming each other's stories. There's similarity in many of these reports, and it's a very complex phenomena. I found more and more data that even some of the other cryptid cases may have some relationship. The more I know about the phenomena, a lot of these strange anomalies that are occurring, they may all be somehow related. And one of the patterns I found many years ago was that many close-range, low-level UFO sightings and many encounters with Bigfoot and other cryptids occur in the vicinity of high-energy sources. So you've got many sightings around high-tension power lines and power plants and railroad tracks and radio towers and bodies of water. And there's no doubt there's an energy connection to a lot of the phenomena we're dealing with.
Well, Stan, it's been an honor talking to you. And again, folks, his website is stangordon.info. That's stangordon.info. We're going to put his information up on the website so you can get it. Every time we do one of these shows, the rabbit hole gets a little bit deeper and deeper. If you've got something to disclose to us or you want to suggest a guest, call us at 1-833-880-9899. That's 1-833-880-9899. Follow the prompts and we'll get it on. I'd like to say thank you to WTWW, the International Shortwave Station, and all of our other local affiliates. This has been Radio Disclosure.